You're in the CMO suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Sean Halter, host of the CMO suite presented by Connectivity Holdings. And I'm here with our last episode of the year with DJ Hamilton. Hello, DJ the DJ.
What a season, huh?
It was fun. We actually had a really good time. And with us to help us close things out is Brett Schneider, Director of Brand Partnerships over at Complex Networks. How are you today, my good friend Brett?
Things in California are great. I think it's around 70 degrees and sunny, as it always is in sunny California. So it's a great day over here.
Which is slightly ironic because you spent some time at 72 and sunny, if I remember correctly.
That is absolutely correct, yes. Which, as I was told when I was working there, the reason they named the company that was because it was the optimal conditions for human living, and they wanted to brand their agency after that.
Oh, that's interesting.
A little fun fact.
I'm a Florida guy, so I'm more like 76, 77. 72, I'm still in long sleeves.
I thought maybe right. It was just because it's always 72 and sunny in California, and so here it would be like 98 and really humid. So talk to us a little bit, if you don't mind going back actually to your time at 72 and sunny, and talk to us a little bit about how you landed over there, what were some of the responsibilities that you had over there, and how you enjoyed your time when you were there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I'm happy to even take a couple steps back.
Please.
There and even just, discuss how I even got into advertising and why, as I think it will help add context to the larger story around then how I ended up at 72 and sunny.
Love it.
But, you know, I think for me, I was always, a real big product nerd. I was the one that got duped into buying the new product because it had the new whiz bang feature in it. And I was constantly chasing the latest and greatest toy that I wanted as a kid. And I would beg my parents, and I had all these little strategies and techniques to essentially market this product to them to encourage them to buy it for me. So I almost was like my own little kid, one man ad agency. Where I was looking at things in the market and trying to convince my parents, to spend the money on it.
Started young.
Exactly. I remember for me as a kid, I used to sign up to any of those things that was like bill me later, which I think they discontinued because I was the person that was like bill me later because my parents figured it out. I don't have to.
That's funny.
Was always kind of obsessed with products, always obsessed with understanding why people like certain products. And I didn't really know until I was in college that was actually a profession.
Yeah.
I wasn't super in touch with, Mad Men. I don't even think it really had been super popularized at that point yet. And I was just working in, I was in the business school, and I was learning about finance and accounting and organizational business and things like that. And those just didn't really appeal to me. And then finally landed in marketing and advertising and really took to this class with my instructor at the time. Her name was Debbie Grossman. Shout out to Debbie from University of Buffalo.
Debbie.
And she, we did this class where it was fully team-based. And you'd get a brief at the beginning of the semester, and you'd essentially do your research. You'd understand who their audience is, why that audience potentially would want that product. And you essentially created a little mini ad campaign. And at the end of the year, you presented your case your business plan for that account to the rest of the team, and everyone judged. And I really just loved the way that things worked. The fact that it wasn't too rooted in just, sales metrics and how to discount your product and all those different levers to pull in order to get people to buy. It was really, tugging on the emotional heartstrings and being able to connect with the consumer on a more emotional level versus just, getting them to make a one-off transaction.
You were
actually building a relationship with that audience. So after college, I started just doing research and trying to find different companies that did this. I think at the time there was, I can either go brand side, I can go to the production side of things, or I can go to the agency side. And I loved music, and I really wanted to work at a record label at the time. So I kind of was like, I had these two passions, music and marketing and advertising, and I wanted to find a way to combine those. And I set off on a path to find the company that was able to bring those two worlds to life, to collide.
And that's where you ended up at Def Jam, I'm assuming.
So I interned at Def Jam. That was kind of that was while I was still in college.
Yeah.
And I was doing strategic marketing for them, which, the really easy way of summing that up is they take a product and they take an artist who might be pushing out an album or a single at that point, and they could build an integrated marketing campaign around that product and that artist. And hopefully, if done correctly, the product connects to that artist in more of an authentic way, so it comes across as really organic and something that artist would probably use in their everyday life.
So, Brett, let me pause you for just a second as you're talking about the journey and making your way up through to where that 72 and Sunny piece is. If you don't mind me asking for just a second, we were just talking about the fact before we jumped on the call that, you know, this is the tail end of this kind of first season. We've probably had maybe 22 guests of all different experience levels, a lot of CMOs, a lot of VPs. It was important for me to have somebody like you on because I felt like, you know, what we don't sometimes see is also the perspective of how this business is working from somebody who's a little bit younger, right? I don't know if you can, do you consider yourself a millennial? Is that a fair, I don't know how far you fall either in or outside of that realm, but as I looked at just some of your profiles, you're talking about this journey. You know, I think one of the interesting things it seems like for people who are maybe potentially your age is it seems like it's okay to kind of move that journey, you know, relatively quickly, or you kind of come in maybe to a place, you soak up something real interesting, you give them some feedback, and then, you know, you've managed to make it through some of the biggest names that are really in the industry a little bit. And so is there some perspective as you're kind of talking your way through kind of that journey? Is there something about that part of things that you feel like is part of that age group where it's okay to kind of move through and you don't have to necessarily stay in any one spot for 10 years because...
You haven't even let Brett answer if he's a millennial yet.
I know, shit.
You let off with that.
Sorry.
So first and foremost, I am a millennial when it is convenient for me.
There you go.
So on days where I feel like we're being painted in the right picture, I'm happy to label myself as a millennial.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also very much remember the time when we didn't have, you know, the internet wasn't working as well as it is now. It wasn't a consumer product as much as it is now. It is not a part of our daily lives as much as it is. And so there are things that I still recall from my childhood where I feel like, I'm kind of really straddling that line. So
yeah.
I think I could play in both worlds. I think as it relates to my trajectory in my career, you know, I never went into a job with a certain amount of time where I needed to stay there.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was never, I need to go to this company and be there for 5 years.
Yeah.
I need to go to this company and be there for 1 year. For me, it was really about experience. And I think the way that the world works right now is that things move very quickly. So you can come in a year's time, put a ton of great work under your belt and have been great and fortunate to work on a ton of different things. So I think for me, it was never really, I was never really mindful when I was in it about how long am I going to stay. And I didn't also leave because I was just bunny hopping to the next thing. I think that is one of the, I think something that is becoming a trend now where I think people can't sit still and they are being labeled as bunny rabbits where, you're not loyal to any one company. You're just jumping to the best opportunity or to the best next salary to move up. And you're not really establishing any roots at that company. And I think that it is very important still to establish those roots because through that, you build contacts, you build relationships, you build trust, and that's going to help you later on in your career.
And at the same time as CMOs and VPs are listening to some of this, it's also important for them to maybe see it again from your perspective, which is sometimes again, that's the nature of the cyclical nature of the business in some ways is that somebody who may be a great fit for you now, it's they're a good fit for you right now. And so you soak up what they can kind of bring to it. So I didn't mean to pull you off of that trajectory, but I felt like it was something interesting as you were kind of talking through it. And you know, as with any of these episodes, you know, we're always trying to figure out how can we kind of tell that story in 15 minutes, which is a short amount of time in some ways. And you never know when somebody gets in there with us, how deep we can dig in. But I felt like that was an interesting part to pull away from this.
And Brett, I definitely, before we wrap up here, I definitely want to hear about Complex Networks and what you're doing with them right now.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, fast forwarding, you know, I'd gotten a chance to work at a number of different agencies, Translation, Droga5, Barton F. Graf, worked on some really great work while I was there with some awesome people. And, you know, spent 3.5 years at 72 and Sunny and primarily spent my time working on Call of Duty and then also did an anniversary campaign for the Sci-Fi Channel and helped reposition them as the station for the fans. I think they were losing market share amongst the science fiction fan and the science fiction audience. and they wanted to reclaim that mantle. So we did some really fun things, most notably a podcast series.
Oh, that's cool. That's right, because you were talking to me about that a little bit when we saw each other out in California.
Exactly, exactly. So
I'm just going to go ahead and assume Sharknado was yours, Brett.
I wish I could take credit for that. But no, we did a podcast series called Origin Stories. It actually just won a Gold Clio a couple weeks ago at the Clio Awards, so pretty proud of that work. And, you know, I just got to a point in my career where I felt like I had checked all the boxes in advertising that I really set out to check.
Yeah.
There were certain companies I really wanted to work on, work for. There were certain brands that I really wanted to work on across different categories. And I felt like I had done, at that point, everything that I really had wanted to do. I wasn't just focused on making big TV spots. I had opportunities like the podcast. So I really diversified the content that I put out into the world with the team that I worked with. And I came to this crossroads where I think, you know, we're at a really interesting point in the content and marketing space. I think you're seeing agencies are trying to diversify their offerings, and that's why I think you see a lot of these agencies spinning off, you know, a strategic consultancy or a production practice. I think you're seeing publishers like a Complex start to operate like an agency can and offer those agency services to clients to be able to be more strategic partners versus just one-off vendors. And I saw a lot of these things happening within our space, and I started to think about my career trajectory and what the story is going to look like when I, you know, hopefully become a CMO one day. And am I just becoming a subject matter expert in how to run a brand and how to develop integrated marketing campaigns?
Yeah.
And I felt like I'd only had one facet of the industry. And I, you know, as a fan of Complex, as somebody that was a reader of Complex since it was created as a magazine in 2002, I'd always had this real affinity for the brand, and I was a fan first, and I wanted to come see how that world worked and how the branded content space works, specifically how the brand partnership space works and how you can take, you know, a really amazing brand like Complex and some of the series that we create, like a Hot Ones, and actually align that with a brand in a way that makes a lot of sense for both, given our audience and our reach and the client's goals.
Well, go ahead.
No, so I've been here, you know, I've been here now for going on 5 months, and it's been a real eye-opening experience because I think on the other side, on the agency side, you're not as exposed to what these publishers are doing.
Sure.
And how they're set up, and I think it's a really interesting time that we're in where there is more overlap between those two entities than I think ever before, and the lines are really becoming blurred between, like, you know, what is a agency responsibility versus what is a publisher responsibility.
Yeah, we talked a few episodes ago with Jay Goodman over at Observatory, and again, I think content will certainly be something with a lot more emphasis in 2019, really, and continuing on certainly from there. So, listen, I appreciate you taking some time, making some time. I get apologize not sending you the invite to block the time a little bit earlier. I also appreciate, again, just some of your perspective on your past history and kind of as you've made your way over there, what some of your goals are for 2019. And again, as I had said when we opened this, I think it's always interesting to have additional insight from different people, from different backgrounds, and from different, you know, parts of their life. So we'll be really interested to kind of see how you continue to make your way over there at Complex as we go into 2019. And I appreciate you taking some time with us.
Appreciate that, yeah. And then, to close out, in terms of goals for 2019, you know, I think I would love to see, you know, a few never-before-done campaigns put into market. I think Complex in 2019 is really going to be continuing to evolve. I think this year was a really big growth year for us in putting out a lot of great content, starting to get recognized for our efforts by more of like the national news. I think you've seen things like Hot Ones on episodes of Stephen Colbert. So late night, you've seen us pop up on Today's Show. So we don't just live within our space on the .com and in the digital space. Our content has really transcended that channel and is performing really well no matter what screen it's being viewed on. So I think we want to take that and continue to build on that performance from this year and continue to bring those never-before-done ideas to market and continue to break new audiences.
2019, we're looking forward to it. Brett Schneider, thank you so much. Director of Brand Partnerships over at Complex
Thanks,
Networks. Thanks for making time for us today.
Thanks. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings. You're in the CMO suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to the CMO suite presented by Connectivity Holdings. This is your host, Sean Halter, and we're super excited today to have on with us a guest, Rob High, a consultant right now for Rob High and Associates and a previous CMO for Young and Rubicon Group. How are you today, Rob?
Just fine, Sean. Just fine.
Thanks for joining us on the show. So you've had, I think, a pretty incredible journey when you look back, obviously, a little bit at your history. You've spent some time with really most of, if not the largest, you know, groups in the industry to some extent. So how did you get involved in the industry, and how did your journey, you know, end up where it ended up, if you don't mind going back in history for just a bit?
Once upon a time, I was a client at Procter & Gamble.
There you go.
And it seemed to me the people on the agency side were having a lot more fun. The grass looks greener.
Isn't that always the case? You're like, geez, man, yeah. I'm sitting through these meetings. Were you living in Cincinnati at the time?
I was.
You're living in Cincinnati. It's cold as hell there, probably, because I lived in there for quite a while. You're meeting with all these agencies, and you're like, damn, they look like they're having more fun. Wait, you have Beer Thursday? What's going on here? So you decided to make the jump. How long were you at P&G?
I was there for three and a half long years.
Yeah, and so then you were like, heck, I'm going to jump to the other side, and that's what started it all.
Yeah, I went to Foot Clone and Belding for a while, and then I joined Y&R. And worked on some of their subsidiaries. And then I was at Kirschenbaum & Bond during its beginning years for 8 years. And then I went back to CMO of Y&R Group, working for Mike Dolan. And that was a very different place to be in terms of size.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's funny when you obviously, we know from the standpoint of the consultancy that I want to make sure we get a chance to talk about with what you've built. But when you look back at that history, when kids today, it's funny to even say that, but when kids today watch Mad Men and they probably just feel like that's so fictional, right? And obviously, I don't want to reach that far back. But really, to me, the industry's changed so much in just the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, everything is digital now, and that's okay because that's, again, where consumers are spending their time. But do you feel like you got a chance to experience it when really the industry was in a bit of a renaissance to some extent, when major agencies mattered?
I was at the tail end of the Mad Men era. I had a bar in my office.
No, there you go. Don't go any further than that. I don't want to get either one of us in any trouble, my friend. Yes, certainly.
But the business has totally changed. Everything is very transactional. Clients doing business via email versus face-to-face, and at the end of the day, it's a relationship business.
Yeah.
Agency client. And if you aren't face to face, if you aren't socializing, you don't really have much of a relationship.
So what an incredible point to go back and just reiterate to some extent. You know, I mean, one of the things I think we've tried to do with this show, and we started up, you know, this season, and part of it was a feeling like, how do you not only connect with more CMOs, but it feels like, again, there's such a transformation going on. You know, I don't know that I've ever spoken to any CMO that just feels like, hey, I get this. You know, I know how everything works. Every CEO is happy with every move I always make. There's so much transformation going on now. But you bring not only the point of the fact that it's still ultimately a relationship-driven business, right?
It is. And it's a business, although data and technology certainly have entered into it. Those things change. The agency world was a world of content. And that's what agencies did, still do. And even though technology may be the place where the content is housed, it's still all about content. And when agencies try and become too technological, I think they lose their way. And to your point about CMOs, no CMO on the planet, no person on the planet knows everything that's going on now because the change factor is so...
It's massive.
It really requires a team of people, a trust and certain people specializing in some areas. And, you know, the CMO is under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
On the search side of my business, I talk to them quite often, and they feel very stressed out because they have unrealistic expectations put upon them, and they don't know how to get there, and which is why the shelf life is down to 22 and a half months for CMOs.
That's crazy when you think about that. You know, again, that's probably something I talk a lot about it in my...
in my social sphere. I talk a lot about it on LinkedIn. I talk a lot about it, you know, with anybody who'll listen to me. You know, I've been in this industry for a while. Certainly, you know, I don't have the historical that you have, but stress is always a factor, and everybody feels like stress is something that's involved in their life. But I feel like what's happened over the last couple of years is a stress factor, you know, times 10. And part of that is just from the fact that it doesn't all make sense. You know, I mean, the industry, it wasn't that hard to understand a strategy wrapped around, make sure you've got some TV, you got to make sure that you've got some print involved there. And if radio makes sense, then great, let's put it in the mix and let's hold everybody accountable. But now you need to almost understand coding. You need to understand CRMs. And for a lot of CMOs, that's stressful because it feels like, well, hold on, I did my time, right?
CRM is relatively speaking, easier to understand, online transaction and so on.
Yeah.
The harder one to understand is social media. There are a lot of CMOs that I talk to when I do client satisfaction audits. They tell me, yeah, I'm doing a lot of social media, but I don't know if it's working or not.
Sure.
I'm not sure. You know, so they have no handle. One guy told me the reason he was doing this because he'd gotten on the internet thing in the 90s 3 years late, and he felt like a moron, and he didn't want to feel like one again, so he was doing a lot of social media.
So tremendous pressure. Certainly, you know, I feel like there's almost two camps in some ways to some extent, Rob. And there's one camp, you know, of men and women who've done their time, who've built some brands and maybe feel like, is this really what I want to do for the last, you know, 10 or 15 years of my career, have to not only learn a completely new language to some extent, but be held to standards that nobody could really provide, you know, the results that seem to be being pushed to some extent. And then you have the other side of that, which is like, hey, you know what, this is the industry I'm in. There's still a lot to love about it. And you know, let me just figure it out. Let me just keep learning and learning and learning. And hopefully I'll continue to learn enough, not only to either stay at the place I'm at, but to be able to find a foothold in what this next part of the industry is.
The smartest way to get ahead is to ask other people questions for them to answer.
Let me make you look back for just a second while we've got at least a little bit of time. The role that you had as a CMO at Young and Rubicon Group. So talk about that part of it, and what did that kind of mean to be a CMO at an agency? Because, again, that's a title that's more prevalent now to some extent, but I'm not sure if back then that was as expected as it is today.
Generally speaking, the CMOs at large agencies just put a catcher's mitt on and hopes consultants throw RFPs at them.
Yeah.
The way it should be done is what I call dating. In the old school, the Mad Men era, you took prospects out and you entertained them. And also, you can't do that today. You can't even get your current clients to go out for coffee.
Yeah.
So you had to develop ways to get in front of prospects and build relationships. And that's what I did primarily at Y&R. Myself and a team of three or four other people would date prospects, never sell, never push.
Sure.
Get to know them, do bringing them information or whatever. And that's how you get the opportunity to compete, or better yet, you just get handed the business.
Do you feel
a much cooler way?
Yeah, that's boy, don't you wish you heard that more often, right? No, here's the business. Yeah. Do you feel like in some ways it's come a little full circle? Just meaning, again, that, you know, this thought process of solve, don't sell, especially at a time where CMOs are challenged to be able to cut through some of the BS and just understand, you know, what is this? How does it work? What does it not do? Where's the profit margin built into that? Has it come back to building content and figuring out smart ways to try to get that content in front of prospects and help educate them in the space?
Well, yes, good agencies are marketing people too, and therefore they can advise the CMO and provide them with ideas and so on. Unfortunately, the talent levels in the agency side are not quite what they used to be.
Yeah.
Also, you've got a lot of people that know the digital space, but they don't know the bigger marketing mosaic, product, price, promotion, traditional, and so on. They just know the digital corner.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, you know, they've got a hammer and they just keep looking for a nail. And that's what they know. They know digital.
So that's a good point. You know, tactic versus a strategy, obviously, right? You know, where you're trying to figure out how to hire the super CMO or the super, you know, person who has some historical and understands legacy and understands building brands, at the same time can kind of navigate their world through there. Do you feel like you see some of those out there, Rob, whether it's from a consultancy group now? And what do you feel like separates those, the haves from the have-nots?
The haves are people who realized that they had to learn and went through a lot of pain and agony to get up to speed and still have to keep going. They know the big picture, and they know the digital corner that there's so much action in. But there aren't very many of people like that out there, not too many.
Yeah. And to that point, you know, you kind of jumped out of the agency business and decided to kind of build a consultancy. And so I think one of the things we've also tried to do within the show is to, again, have a mix of some guests, certainly plenty of CMOs, as you would expect in the title of a podcast called The CMO Suite. But we've also found it interesting to have certainly VPs of digital and have some consultants on from time to time to be able to, again, just help educate in the space. So when you jumped out, what brought you to deciding to kind of build out a consultancy?
Oh, I got fired. My boss got
there you
fired
go.
By Martin Sorrell.
Yeah.
About half of his direct reports got a bullet, so I had some severance. So I decided I had enough and started my consultancy.
And so did you think at the time it would just be, well, let me do this for a year while I see where my buddies and my friends end up, and then I'll jump back in it, and you just end up finding a love and a passion for it?
I think I had some kind of, like, maybe wish that something would happen in the first 6, 8, 10 months. But after about 18 months of the consultancy, I was at my own schedule. I could do what I wanted.
Yeah.
I could declare a holiday for Rob High Associates.
Take Fridays off, right?
I was making a lot of money and traveling a lot, so it didn't suck.
Yeah. So it sounds like, again, you found some peace in that to some extent.
Absolutely.
You know, certainly stress like everything else, but you found that you didn't need, you know, the title, you didn't need the corner office. It gave you some freedom to be able to do good work and find good people out there. And geez, you've stuck with it. Sounds like, again, you've been doing that for really the last, 15 years or so.
That's correct.
And so talk to us, if you can, on the last couple of minutes that we have. And again, once again, thank you for making some time for us to join us on the show. It's Rob High. He's had a tremendous amount of time in the industry, certainly a legacy in the industry, and has seen some of the historical of it. Talk to us about the development of that consultancy and what makes a good client for you.
A good client for me is an agency who's willing to change how they do things when it comes to new business. Most of my practice is new business consulting to agencies. And I teach them basically using new tools, but the old school Mad Men approach to building a relationship and dating prospects. Too many agencies, they have zero awareness, and every once in a while they send out a box of materials and no one would respond. Then they'd call them and no one would call back. And they felt like they had to resort to prayer as their only outreach medium. I mean, they'd basically give it up. And most agencies have zero awareness, and yet only 20% of agencies have any kind of communications program with any regularity, which means the other 80% is lying in the middle of the road waiting to get run over.
And praying, right? And praying.
Yeah.
Is it almost like the painter? You feel like, you know, you've got this amazing guy who paints houses, does an amazing job, or girl, and then you go to their house and the back hasn't been painted in 8 months, or the front hasn't been painted and it's chipped paint on there. We're so bad at our own versions of communication, to your point, that we forget all of those things that we tell our clients they need to be doing all the time sometimes, right?
You're 100% right. I try and teach a new, simple way to do the communicating that doesn't require much time or but much money, then I have to teach them how to date. The problem is that it's so hard to get in front of a prospect. Most agencies act like a 16-year-old boy on their first date with a head cheerleader.
Yeah,
a lot of inappropriate action.
Boy, there's something to be said there, Rob. I'm gonna stay out of that one. That's for darn sure for both our sake. But the good thing for us again is the fact that again we've got a lot of agencies that listen to this show, as well as plenty of CMOs that are out there. And so to your point and to your word of dating, you know, to us, hopefully, again, this is one of those perfect kind of situations where you get a chance, whether you're a CMO, to be able to kind of listen in and hear a little bit about some of your legacy that's there. Or if you're an agency principal or a new business development person, you get a chance to hear from somebody who's talking about really what's happened before in the industry and what's happening right now. So, Rob, I told you it would go fast. Hopefully you feel like it was a time well spent. I know it went fast from my standpoint. We've talked about making these episodes a little longer going into next year. And to your point, again, we get caught somewhere between the two. We have CMOs that are like, I got 15 minutes. If you can send me a podcast that's 15 minutes, I'll listen to it. But then you get great insight like this. So we want to thank you for joining us on the show today. If you want to find out a little bit more about Rob, you can certainly jump and stalk him on LinkedIn, as I do often. He always has great insights and information. And if you want to find out a little bit more about this specific episode with Rob, you can find out more at thecmosuite.com. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.